Chapter 18. Finally, finally, there is fighting again. True fighting. Fighting that hurts. Fighting that is a test. Dragon feels his muscles burning. His killing hand is dripping with blood and power armor coolant. His bolt pistol is almost out of ammunition, his armor dented and charred. A white consul comes for him, sprinting down the long gallery. They are all within the citadel now, just part of the contagion that spreads through it. Word-bearers run rampant, carried by their momentum of terror and atrocity. Tanks roll down the narrow streets and up steep ramps, bolstered by whole squads of unbroken. Flames have broken out all over, fast-kindled slicks of oil, and the smoke gets everywhere, making the atmosphere bitter and choking. Dragon sees one of the unbroken blasted apart, riddled with hits from at least two bolters. He sees a gang of Sabbatine Praetorians slaughtered by a single word-bearer carrying a bronze axe. The slaughter is free-flowing now. They are in among the enemy, in their halls and their corridors, their dungeons and their command towers. The white consul crashes into contact, and the two of them trade crushing blows. Dragon has to work hard to move his claw, to block a swipe from a power sword, to push back, to go for the jugular. These adversaries are fast, precise, working in interlocking squads that back one another up and press forward in tandem. Already Dragon can see more locator signals approaching, racing into battle. He cries out as he punches back with the claw, hurling the white consul into an already teetering column. He swivels, trying to draw a bead with the pistol, but his adversary is not yet done. He lunges back into contact, thrusting his power sword two-handed. Dragon feels the blade bite, carving down under the layers and layers of filth and sediment and rotting ceramite. He pulls away, swinging forcefully and nearly yanking the sword out with him. His claw whistles hard and fast, punching into the white consul's midriff and driving through the cabling. Impaled, the space marine still fights, scrabbling for a bolt pistol to fire at point-blank range. He nearly makes it. Dragon jerks his killing talons suddenly upward, lifting his adversary from his feet and crushing his lungs. Then he fires his own pistol straight into the space marine's gorget, blowing his throat out with a single shot. After that, he's moving again, shaking the corpse loose and running, making use of the power and speed that he still possesses, even as his battle brothers sway and stride behind him. The gallery has its roof blown off at the far end, collapsed after being hit by a Thunderhawk's battle cannon, and smog is piling in from the maelstrom outside. Dragon can just make out the burning profile of towers beyond, still with the flickering trails of void shields, but now swarmed by gunships. The invaders are getting close to the citadel's inner layers now, fighting steadily up every artery and causeway. The going is stone hard, the defense ferocious and committed. How could it not be? There is nowhere for these people to go. Another space marine races to engage him, haloed in a wave of solid round fire from dug-in Praetorians. Dragon fires the last of his bolt shells, missing narrowly. He can admire the commitment here, even the skill, but in truth, these enemies are just symbols for him, obstacles to be overcome, like whetstones to sharpen his own capability. The two of them slam together, blade against claw, and their limbs blur. He absorbs another stab and staggers back. His enemy goes after him, fainting before thrusting. But Dragon is bigger and stronger, his body flooded with the gifts of the god. He slices in return, a vicious transverse whip that scores across his enemy's breastplate and carves up the armor. Phages catch where his poisoned talons dig deep, and the blood is thicker than it should be. But still the space marine fights on, driving his blade into Dragon's stomach, once, twice, severing muscles wetly. Dragon cries out, furious now. He headbutts the space marine, and their helms crack together. He butts again, then swings a leaden punch, catching him full on his cracked faceplate. A lens is shattered. More blood sprays. For a moment, he thinks he's done enough, but the space marine stabs with the sword tip again, going for his throat. Dragon yanks away from danger, and the killing edge shoots a finger's width past his chin. He punches a final time, putting all his weight and fury behind it, a pile driver of a strike that caves in the ceramite and digs down into flesh beyond. He feels the skull crumple, the burst of hot fluid, and knows this is, at last, enough. As he rises, searching for another kill, he is panting, covered in sweat, his twin hearts booming. The wall ahead of him collapses, blown apart by the impact of something enormous. He hears the drum and boom of engines, and a vox-distorted roar. Then the dreadnought emerges from the dust and flying debris, striding out in an aegis of battle cries. Dragan can just make out shouts of, "Jeremiah's!" before an assault cannon opens up. He flings himself to the floor as the world dissolves into a thunder of destruction. Locator runes blink out across his swaying visual feed, and he knows that his brothers are dying. "Shit!" he curses, crawling over the corpse of the space marine he has just killed, reaching out for his bolter. The dreadnought sways closer, treading heavily through a crumpled landscape of tangled steel and rockcrete. White consoles are advancing behind it, using it for cover, and Dragan sees two word-bearers caught up in the barrage and shredded. He runs a quick mental tally, the surviving unbroken in the gallery versus the enemy, and realizes they cannot win this.
"Shit!"
he says again, grabbing the bolter and preparing to leap to his feet. He never makes it. From behind him, from the stairwell that they have just gained with their own tally of bloodshed, something even bigger emerges. Freed from his prison on Solus, Naum seems ludicrously big, as if he is uncurled and stretched out, and relaxed, held in lungs and stomachs. He staggers into the ruined gallery, his huge shoulders ploughing through the vaulted roof and showering his path with clumps of plaster. Just like the rest of the Unbroken, he is hardly raging. His mouth gapes, and his tiny eyes amid all that plate and flesh and dust are merely blinking, as if startled by the light. He is covered in blood, his claws dripping with it, and a battered white console is still clutched in one fist, dragged like a child drags a half-forgotten doll. The dreadnought lets loose on him, booming battle cries and sending streams of shells smacking into the Leviathan's leathery hide. The space marines follow up, generating their own chorus of bolter fire. Naum never even cries out. The projectiles thud into him, stripping and tearing, rocking the hellbrute back on his immense, squat legs. He just keeps on going, lowering his shoulders against the withering barrage, throwing the bedraggled corpse aside and reaching out for the origin of this fresh pain. Dragan watches his tiny grey face crumple into a kind of confused agony before he strides past, closing on the dreadnought. Other survivors, both Unbroken and Wordbearer, scramble up from their prone positions and join the assault. This engagement is accelerating fast. The terrain around them is taking a hammering from the flying shells, and another column blows apart in a hail of stone flecks. Dragan gets to his feet, taking aim, ignoring the blood running down his chest. Just as he does, he gets a priority comburst from Philemon.
"Gallowsman, withdraw to my position."
"Are you mad?"
Dragan growls, opening fire. He keeps low, trying to draw a bead on that accursed dreadnought before Naum obscures his line of sight entirely.
"We're closing on the heart of it."
"That is the issue. Look around you. How many word-bearers in your attack?"
Hardly any. The brunt of this is being borne by the Unbroken, and they are paying a heavy price. Even as he watches, another plague marine is smashed to the ground, his armor torn open by the blistering onslaught of the assault cannon. Naum swaggers into close range, swinging his enormous fists and finally croaking out something like anger.
"Vaux has let this slip," Philemon goes on. "You know it, brother. We're being used. He won't move against them until it's too late."
Dragan hesitates, crouching down again. The crescendo of bolter shells is driving all other sounds out, and another wall is teetering on the edge of destruction. He sees a white console go down under heavy fire, and another Unbroken blasted into lumps of gristle. The two giants are close to wrestling range now, and they are tearing the masonry up around them.
They're crawling through the tunnels, rounding up the mortals. You understand what they intend. They'll let us take this place for them, but it's just an altar. He doesn't see it. Gallowsman, pull back here. Someone needs to act.
Dragan curses. His internal battle maps are jumpy and out of kilter, but he does see some patterns there. Word-bearer units ignoring the main clusters of defense, heading into the hab zones.
Damn him! Vorks was always a credulous fool. This was on the cards from the start.
Where are you?
Dragan voxes, pulling back, firing all the while. Naum is hammering at the dreadnought now, huge, two-fisted blows.
Three levels down. Bring what you can. The zealots are the enemy.
Dragan looks up a final time. The fight between the two leviathans is already apocalyptic, and Naum has taken some heavy damage. He would like to watch this, but does not fool himself that there is anything he can do to alter the outcome. A sick feeling washes over him. He has been too keen to get to the action, to exercise that prowess so long kept under wraps. They have all been too keen.
Understood,
he voxes, and begins to move. He can summon many more. He can pull them out and muster at Philemon's position. This is working against Vorks. This is seizing the chance. Despite everything, his long resentment, the knowledge of his destiny, his overbearing confidence, there is still a step to be taken. Perhaps this is the last vestige of his old self, that iron discipline, struggling to shuffle out of contention. When the moment comes, you have to take it. He looks over at Naum, who is lost in his combat now. The blows being exchanged by those two are immortal. Almost regretfully, he opens the comm to the Unbroken under his direct command.
Pull back!
He voxes. He withdraws to the stairwell, firing all the time.
Regroup at coordinates to follow. We have new targets. Repeat, we have new targets.
Slurt likes being underground. Being blind in these places is no handicap at all, and the sensation of cold, old walls pressing in tight is one he is used to. He detects bodies, thousands of them, most very close. They have packed them in, the Imperials, hoarding them like gold in the dungeons of this ancient place. Perhaps they thought they would be safe in here. He has some sympathy for that. A Chapter Fortress monastery would, in ordinary times, be among the very safest places in the galaxy. But as Vorks has reminded them on many occasions, these are hardly ordinary times. The White Consuls have been unlucky. They were cut off, left high and dry. Their strength bled from them in a war on the edge of real space. They have done, in this situation, what 9,000 years of constant doctrine has told them to do. Get behind the walls and gather what strength remains. But these things no longer hold true when a demon can spew forth from the air at the click of fingers. The masters of this world, so close to the epicenter of Abaddon's Rift, were already partly overrun before Solas got here, and this is just the final act. For all the talk of tests and danger, Vorks must have known there was little risk here. The true danger comes from elsewhere. That is the great lesson of history, something the Death Guard have always appreciated. The real enemy is seldom the one you can see, in front of you with sword in hand, but the one you can't, in the shadows, or in the past, or within yourself, coiled ready for the moment of ripening when all plans are suddenly undone. Slurt is not alone. He makes his pilgrimage down the tunnels with his guards, the Unbroken of his Kada, limping through the dark in their phosphor-pale battleplate. He has his servitors and his slaves, hauling the contraptions he has brought down so reverently from Solas. They are huge, those machines, marked with the sign of the god and dragged on corroding segmented tracks. They hiss and they gout, powered by that familiar fusion of the mechanical and the divine, studded with grapple-mounted vials that swill dark fluids. Slurt would not like to lose these things. He has poured much effort into them, working the bellows, refining the pumps. They are fragile, for all their apparent sturdiness. A single well-aimed bolt shell would puncture the bladders and flood the tunnels, and thus he goes deep, keeping the unbroken ahead and behind, scurrying through the narrow ways of the citadel's forgotten foundations. His gifted eyes are busy throughout. They peer up, they peer out, focusing and blinking under the skin. He can see constellations of souls above, rammed tight, like glowing mats of coral under a night-black ocean. The guard will be light on these places, for the castellans are more than busy elsewhere. That is what he must hope in any case. Time is also short. For so long they have had all the time they could ever want, in the eye and out of it, and yet now it is racing, aging them, wearing at them. Perhaps this is a blip, an aberration, and the long war will return to its silted-up course. He does not know yet which option he would prefer. He blinks. He senses the sicknesses, the fears, the mortal pungency of anticipation. Slurt would have liked to have seen the Primarch, to have examined him with his many perceptive eyes. He would have liked to have entered the manse and witnessed just for a moment what glorious contagions had been created in that superlative body. For this reason, along with many others, he still cleaves to Vorx's path, the one that will take them back to Mortarion's side. All know that he is back, but few have seen him yet. To fight alongside him, at the head of the Legion, just as in the Age of Wonder, that would be the pinnacle of a life. That would be worth all the toil in the laboratoriums and the toxin banks. They are a long way from that. They are in the heart of the wasteland, locked together with two enemies that wish to kill them. The numbers do not look good. The augurs do not look good. Something must be done to swing the scales back in their favor. And so he is condemned to leave the real slaying to Garstag and pursue this grubbing course at the root of the world. Slurt presses on, goading the slave gangs into greater speed. He hears the whispered reports of the Unbroken as they stagger through the dripping vaults and lets his many eyes do the rest. When his ramshackle cavalcade finally breaks out, bursting upwards and outwards of the long and winding well shafts, it is met by screams and panic. Slurt smiles at this, clambering arduously over an eroded stone lip, and limps out towards them. These are mortal humans, hundreds strong, locked in a chamber they must have thought entirely secure. And here are monsters now, clawing their way up from the floor itself. How nightmarish for them. How like every bad dream they have ever had.
"Calm down,"
he says, amused by the reaction. This is merely the first of many chambers he has to process. Already the devices are being hauled up, lifted by strong, calloused hands.
"Believe me, this is for the best."
They are trying to get away, but they cannot get out. They are like rats in a trap. Slurt looks out at them, and his many eyes blink. He sees the flow of their overlapping bloodstreams, like the tracery of branches against a winter sky. Nothing he tells them is a lie. Even down here, they can hear the nearing booms of combat, the approach of those who have no concern at all for their welfare. And so all this really is for the best. They are clawing at one another now, trying to force the doors open.
"Begin,"
Slurt tells his slaves, and the machines are dragged into position.
"Quick as you can."
It doesn't take long. He smells it first, then feels the chill as the air sighs out of the chamber. Though he cannot see it, he knows what is happening. The first blooms will be rising now, followed by the larvae that have been so carefully harvested. It must be quite, quite beautiful.
"Try to relax,"
Slurt says to them all, remembering how it was in the void so long ago, before all these things were known of, and how much better it has become since then.
Silence will make this a great deal easier.